Senate Veterans Committee on Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Not last weekend, but the weekend before, we had Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, and there were a number of us that participated in a mile walk where we had, it was a walk to bring awareness to sexual assault in our society and in the military. And it was so wonderful to have these guardsmen, Oregon National Guardsmen, in their uniform walking with us and making a statement. And we had a lot of, we just walked around in Salem, and horns honking and waving at us. So this is an issue, I think, that's extremely important to bring attention to. And the reading I'm going to do today is from Sergeant First Class Kim DeYoung. She's a U.S. Army Reserve. And she said, on the base we had a great woman. Oh, let's not read this one. Let's read another one. From Sergeant Kimberly Baptist. She's a U.S. Army Reserve. It's just really bad for the women who, and she wrote this when she was in Afghanistan. It's just really bad for the women who have to go to the bathroom at night. You don't want to walk 2 to 5 minutes in the dark because there were rapes that went on around there. I mean, soldiers raping soldiers. It's horrible. We're in a war. Can't you be nice to each other? But people are people. So we used a lot of porta potties. And when there were rapes, they put out wanted signs and they put up our rewards. And they did get prosecuted. We had JAG out there, and they actually had a court where people went to hearings, and we had witnesses and everything. I knew the people. If I did not know them, I didn't know they were the victims, because it's very under wraps. I wasn't wandering around in the dark. I mean, they tell you to bring flashlights, but what's a flashlight going to do? Just something that I think the military is taking on and society as a general to bring attention and awareness to this and try to stop it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, colleagues, members of the public, members of the audience out there. We're actually going to do the schedule in reverse order and so we'll do 2230, 2210, and then 2036 in that order. Shouldn't surprise anybody being an Army officer. Everybody knows we do things backwards. So we're actually doing that because we have members of the legislature here that have to go to other committee members. And with that, we're going to open a informational hearing on 2230. Council, if you would, Representative, if you come up, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2230 requires Oregon Health Authority to notify the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs of an agreeable veteran's name and address, declares an emergency, and sets an effective date of July 1st, 2015, becomes operative January 1st, 2016. There's no revenue impact and a fiscal statement issued. The House committee was unanimous, and the House floor was unanimous. This is very familiar to this committee. It is the no wrong door policy as applied to Health Authority. It began with BOLI and then ODOT and then DHS, and so now we've got another agency coming forth, it looks like.
Well, Madam Representative, welcome to the lower chamber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Montes Anderson. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13, and it's great to be in the East Wing. I'm going to make just a few remarks for the record, recognizing that you are very familiar with this, including the no wrong door policy. Oregon has over 322,000 veterans, many of those qualifying for federal veterans benefits. However, only 3 out of 10 Oregon veterans have accessed and claimed federal benefits. So taking steps to increase veterans' access and use of those federal benefits is good for our veterans, and it's good for the state. In 2013, $2.2 billion in federal benefit dollars came to Oregon. Half of that amount, $1.1 billion, was in checks written directly to veterans for compensation and pension payments. In 2013, $92 million was received every month by more than 61,000 veterans. In my county alone, in Lane County, $10 million comes into that county through these payments. In 2013, the legislature passed House Bill 2421 requiring Department of Motor Vehicles Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division of the Department of Veterans and the Department of Veterans Affairs to share the names and addresses of service members and veterans who applied for licenses or title transfers. The applicant must affirmatively state that they would be like to be contacted by ODVA. Through that process, ODVA has now received over 27,000 veteran names in 2014 to add to their list of contacts, and the monthly numbers are increasing to about 3,000 a month. This system, this process is working. That is the no wrong door policy that the committee administrator has mentioned, and I appreciate that. ODVA has been contacting more than 27,000 veterans with information. They provide Veterans Benefits Magazine with details of all federal and state benefits and how the veteran can contact the county veteran service officer. Based on the success of that DMV legislation, this bill takes the same approach and now requires Oregon Health Authority to take that simple step of just asking individuals who are applying for health care services or benefits whether they've served in the military and whether they would like to be contacted by ODVA. It's voluntary, but we are being proactive in reaching out. Many of them will say, yes, please, I would like to be contacted. This question to veterans would be placed on both electronic and paper forms of programs administered by the health. So this bill would expand the no wrong door policy. During the committee discussion in the House, the representative from District 59 suggested that we should also be reaching out to Housing and Community Services to collaborate with Community Action Partnership of Oregon. Together, the department and Community Action Partnership have written a letter to the committee expressing their intent to craft effective, efficient strategies to ensure connections with other agencies, so thus expanding it even beyond health and now to housing. I want to express thanks to the representative and the department for helping us to make that expanded policy. As we increase the federal dollars coming to Oregon veterans, more money goes directly to the veteran, and it recirculates in the Oregon economy. It's good for our state. It's good for the veteran. If better outreach efforts increased the compensation by only 2%, for example, it would increase federal dollars going directly to veterans by $22 million a year. That is a lot of money to help veterans and a lot of money to circulate in the state's economy. I hope that you will find that you support this approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Representative Nathan, as a ways and means person, the fiscal was brought on. I think your staff mentioned the fiscal. Have you seen any feedback? I just find it ironic. We have the two entities under the Oregon Health Authority, Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and the Oregon Employees Benefits Board. I find it more than interesting that, as we all know, at least the members of the legislature know this, that if you have somebody that comes in and you can get them on a veterans program, the federal benefits, as you outlined, is huge, and we have two fairly large institutions that, haven't been doing this and are looking a gift horse in the mouth and not taking any action. And then we look at the fiscal here. Any thoughts on maybe why, or any feedback on the fiscal, since you've read it too?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have read the fiscal impact statement. It's usually a frustration for me to read that there's an immediate fiscal impact without acknowledging the benefit, which results in a net benefit to the state budget, sometimes even within the same biennium. That sort of thing isn't factored in to this kind of an impact statement. Yes, often indeed you are, there's either cost avoidance or cost offsets or mitigating costs in other areas of the state budget, and that's exactly what this would do. I have also inquired about those specific projections, the $177,000 for one instance and $190,000 for another. There is apparently contracting with a private entity to make changes to a program. I made inquiries, well, what if the changes were made at the same time that the annual changes are made to these employee benefit systems? Because each year there are little tweaks that happen. I've suggested that we look at that for an economic efficiency, that it didn't have to be done immediately, could be done part of an annual package of changes. It's also rather astonishing to think that to add two questions to a form is going to cost $300,000. These are the sorts of questions that all of us ought to continue to ask and continue to push on with regard to information technology services, whether they're in-house or contracting for external help. Yes, I've been asking a lot of questions. Nevertheless, I think we should do this, and there will be a net benefit to the state.
Well, Madam Representative, I'm glad you have more patience than I do. I didn't display very good patience on the floor today, as Madam Vice Chair would say, but you had a question.
No, but that's good. You know, as a provider in public health, which is a part of the health system, to me, as a provider, as a nurse, a public health nurse, asking that question when I was in the homes of these patients, whether they were a veteran or not, and if they said yes, would open so many more doors. And I hadn't even thought about asking if they were a veteran or not. So I really think that it goes far beyond what maybe the Oregon Health Authority is looking at right now, that it could be really advantageous for the client. We need to be client-focused. Thanks.
Well, Representative, I mean, we do have two other witnesses. You have someplace to go, but if your staff did not inform you, we're a deliberative body over here, so that means we don't do work sessions and hearings on the same day, but it's been put on the work plan to be scheduled for next week for a work session. Unless, of course, Mr. Belt and Mr. Smith screw this whole thing up for you, but I don't think they were. So thank you, Representative. We appreciate it. Mr. Belt, Mr. Smith, you want to come up? Is there anybody else that wants to testify? There's an empty chair here, trying to be expedient.
For the record, my name is Eric Belt. I'm the statewide Veteran Services Director for the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs. My comments in support of this bill will be brief. ODVA supports Representative Nathanson's bill, House Bill 2230, because it increases the department's ability to provide outreach to a greater number of veterans in order to provide them with the comprehensive information about their federal and state benefits and resources. Ultimately, the goal is for the veteran to access and utilize the resources and claim any benefits the veteran has earned. As Representative Nathanson stated, the return on investment to the state is significant. Only 3 in 10 of the more than 320,000 veterans you've heard many times have applied for and are receiving federal benefits. One of the ways to increase this number is to reach out to more veterans and provide them with information about their federal and state benefits. Setting up a contact to a county veteran service officer who can file their claim and give them information about the many resources that are available to veterans. It's key to be able to increase that number from greater than 3 in 10. So, subject to your questions, thank you for giving me this opportunity to provide support for this bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson. My name is Andy Smith from the Association of Oregon Counties. And what I wanted to do briefly is amplify some of the data which underlines the opportunity here. So I've shared with the committee administrator two different charts. You may have seen them before. So I'm going to let her get those to you. But the first chart that I'd start with is in black and white. And I'll wait just a quick moment, Senator Monis Anderson, so you can see it. But this is the raw data from the VA in terms of the expenditures that they make across the country in terms of federal VA benefits. And you'll see that by state, you'll see veterans numbers, and you'll see areas of compensation and pension, education, and then also health care. So just to give you can look at this, but what you're going to see is that there's opportunity in Oregon, like there is in every state. But if we're only reaching about 3 out of 10 in terms of the target population, you'll see that in terms of health care, this is on the far right column. Some of the states, I think it's South Dakota, has gotten to, that's in the back page, was it South Dakota, was a great number, 39%. So in other words, in the VA healthcare system, they're reaching 40% of their veterans. So if we're at 30, if you did a raw number of, an estimate of 10% of our population, that maybe a ballpark number is 30 plus thousand Oregon veterans maybe might be able to access VA healthcare. if we continue to kind of get the word out and, that access issue, if we can work on that. So that's the context nationally. This other chart has to do with compensation and pension. And when Representative Nathanson talked about the raw numbers, they really are quite impressive in terms of the from 2007. So this is the blue column of numbers. It's the kind of to the right of the page, or the color page. Since 2007, there's almost $500 million of additional federal dollars that have flowed into Oregon for federal benefits. So again, I don't think we're ever going to get to 100% by any means in terms of how many veterans we're going to reach for their benefits. But even if we move from the 30s, if we could push up in those upper 30s, you can see how significant these numbers can be to benefit our veterans and our communities across Oregon. So AOC is very excited about Representative Nathanson's bill, the kind of latest effort to help with access, and we're happy to support it today. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
No, just I think any way we can get our veterans into services helps them. I mean, I'm not looking just at the dollar amounts that would come in to help us, but they would definitely help the servicemen or the vets.
Well, since I'm Mr. Darkest before it's pitch black, Council, we will schedule this for next week, and I do want you to put in the issues discussed, the issues about the fiscals and future savings, so on and so forth. I'm certain when someone glances at that fiscal statement, there's going to be some pushback in both caucuses. So we'll have to overcome that. With that, thank you very much. No one else wants to testify. We're going to close the informational hearing on 2230. Open a public hearing now that we have a quorum on HB 2210. Representatives, if you want to start coming up, Council, if you would review the bill for us, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2210A authorizes media access to restricted areas under emergency declaration. It prohibits emergency personnel from commandeering broadcaster property, requires the Office of Emergency Management to authorize a private broadcasters association to plan to create a program to issue credentials for authorized persons. It requires such plan to include specified training, requires the private broadcasters association to submit an annual report to OEM. There is a dash A5 amendment. It permits access only to maintain critical equipment. The House committee was unanimous. Off the floor was unanimous. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no such referral.
Okay, gentlemen, you can fight amongst yourself. Who goes first?
Thank you, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, and Senator Olson. House Bill 2210 comes to you from the Broadcast Caucus. Did you know there was one?
Well, there's at least two.
Oh, we've got Bill Post, Lou Frederick. Oh, yeah, we're growing.
It's bipartisan, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. You know, we've had hours of hearings and testimony, every session we do. I know we have this session about resilience and emergency preparedness. And one of the key factors about in an emergency situation is communication. And I speak from experience, and I know Representative Wilson will also, as broadcasters that have served our communities through numerous fires and floods and storms, it is critical to not only our listeners to get the information, but also to the emergency providers to be able to contact us and get emergency messages out to the folks so that they steer clear of certain roads or bridges or whatever those instructions might be. So it is critical to be able to stay on the air. We've got to be able to get to our equipment, our transmitter site. And so that's really what this bill gets to, is training certain broadcasters within their organizations to be certified to know the proper emergency procedures to go through so that they can access areas that would be closed to the public during a disaster and be able to access their equipment to stay on the air. So I will stand down from that. I know Representative Wilson's got testimony, and the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, you'll hear some good information on 2210. Thank you.
Is that a frequency, 2210?
A little high.
Representative, can you restate your name in case it's not on the record?
Probably because I didn't say it, because I always forget that. John,
who are you again, please?
John Huffman, House Representative for District 59. Thank you. Thank you. Apologies.
All right, so now that he's done that one, you're good to go. He's done the rehearsal. We can go live now.
So it's good. Thank you. Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Olson, thank you for hearing the bill today. We appreciate that. Representative Huffman has really said anything that I would want to say, to tell you
the truth. And who are you again?
Pardon me?
And who are you?
Carl Wilson, House District 3. Thank you.
We're the worst.
Yeah, we are. We're kind of shy, and we don't like to mention our names on the air very often. But anyway, thank you. We appreciate you hearing the bill. We have about a 60-year compact with our community as being the radio stations that are known for broadcasting emergency information when it gets bad in our area. And forest fires are only forecast to grow worse over time. We really need to get to our equipment to make sure our equipment is serviceable and running as we serve with our FM translators many diverse communities. So, again, we appreciate you hearing the bill today. It's really imperative for us. We thank you.
I do have one question. I'm just curious because it came out 57-0, and we have a dash 5 amendment. Did the House make a mistake or something? Do we need to fix an error here? Or the A5
Mr.
amendment?
Mr. Chair, the House make a mistake? Was that rhetorical?
Mr. Chair, I would say that it came out of the House perfect, right, in every way. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe we will have testimony as to the reason for the requested amendment. It's pretty minor. Everybody was agreeable.
Okay, thank you. Madam Vice Chair, questions?
So I have in OLIS the dash ones. Evidently, you adopted the dash fours, and so it's the dash fives that we're going to. Oh.
Madam Vice Chair, it's the A5.
Okay.
A5, and there is a hard copy at the dais as well.
Thank you.
I'm not sure which version they adopted House side. Mm-hmm. Which of those proposed amendments they adopted House side.
Okay.
Sorry. The A5 has a whopping four additional words,
yeah,
providing a public service. Senator Olson, questions?
Yeah, yes, I just came from a House committee, and they thoroughly eviscerated me, so I guess I get to get back at you guys.
No,
I told them to behave.
No, this is a good bill. The one thing that concerns me is when we have one of these events, it's going to be difficult to get around. And so my question is, when you allow the passage to get to your equipment, the question in my mind is, will you have the means to get there? And if you have the means to get there, will you have the means to fix if you have a problem? And I guess once you get there, you can see what you can do.
Yeah, Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, you have to get there first to see what the damages are. We have telemetry so that we can check in and do a much better job of telling what we're going to be running into when we get to the transmitter site than we used to 25 years ago. But oftentimes you have to get in there and see what the situation is. And sometimes it's just getting in there and making sure that your facility and equipment are out of harm's way, or do everything you can around the transmitter site to make sure that fire doesn't lick up at the edge of the building or whatever. But I would like to point out, because it's indirect to your comment, and I failed to mention this, although I think subsequent testimony would cover it. The incident commander of a disaster situation is always the final word. So if they determine that a situation is just too dangerous for anybody to get through, then they have the final word and we don't go.
Thank you. One follow-up question,
please.
And I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure it gets on the record. Who will provide the documentation and the badges and all that to show that you're the qualified people that get through the lines?
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters will be working in conjunction with emergency management, so that Dave Stuckey is here. I don't know if he's going to testify or not, but he's been involved the whole way. They will approve the coursework for certification, but Oregon Association Broadcasters and individual broadcasters will cover all of the expense, so there's no fiscal connected.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming over
Thanks
here
so much
to the lower chamber. With that, we're going to ask Ellen Miller, Bill Johnstone, Mike Everhart, and yes, Mr. Stuckey, bring an extra chair because we want to move quicker here. So we'll get all four of you
up here. Grab us up here.
Yep.
Maria can grab the one that's
Is this someone's folder?
Well, they didn't remember their names, so they probably forgot their books.
Where do you want to do this? Oh, and cell phones, too. Please. You want to get to the next?
Ladies first.
All right, good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ellen Miller with CFM Strategic Communications, representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, the OAB, this afternoon. Thank you so much for your consideration today of House Bill 2210A. We really appreciate you giving the time for the public hearing. We also wanted to thank Representative Huffman for all the work that he did do on the House side to get this important piece of legislation to you today. He was very helpful in working with all stakeholders, specifically the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, the state police, the chiefs of police, the Emergency Managers Association. In addition, we also reached out to the cable industry and the newspaper publishers. We wanted to be sure that we could bring a non-controversial bill to you today for your consideration. Questions were just asked to Representative Huffman, but I'm available to answer any questions regarding the legislation, specifically the Dash 5 amendment, the Dash A5. I did want to note that that was just removing a couple words saying providing a public service. There were concerns that came out of the House side that this legislation as drafted gave the broadcasters an unfair advantage in reporting the news behind emergency lines, and it bears repeating that the intent of this legislation is for broadcasters to stay on the air during the emergency. So it is really to allow them access to their facilities so that they can stay on the air to provide the public the critical information during an emergency. With that, I'd like to pass it on to Bill Johnstone, the president and CEO of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Mons Anderson, Senate President Courtney, and Senator Olson. I am Bill Johnstone. I'm the President and CEO of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and I'm happy to be here this afternoon to represent more than 200 radio and television broadcasters in the state of Oregon. We have a deep sense of commitment for the well-being of our listeners and our viewers and the communities that we belong to and play a critical role in providing information for. Eight states have recently adopted a bill similar to ours, a first informer bill. States of Arizona, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Nevada, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Virginia. As you can see, these states are spread all over the country. The radio stations and TV stations in those states providing the critical information that they need to keep their stations on the air. We reviewed the legislation from all of these states and tried to learn from the language that they used in their legislation. To show you how the credentialing provisions for HB 2210A-5, I believe, would work, I've submitted on our letter, on the OAB's letterhead, page entitled How It Works, and it summarizes very well how the plan is developed, how it's administered, and how the regimen that the individuals would need to go through to be credentialed as a first informer. Again, I'll be happy to answer questions too, but I would turn the table of the mic over to Mike Eberhardt, who represents the radio television stations engineering area and the Society of Broadcast Engineers.
Thank you, Bill. And thank you, Chair Boquist, Senate President Courtney, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Eberhardt. I'm a broadcast engineer in the Portland, Oregon area. And also, I should mention, I am a first responder, having been a volunteer firefighter and EMT for the last 10 years. So I bring a two-sided view to this issue. The broadcast engineering community holds a deep commitment to serving the public, and we are firmly in favor of this bill, House Bill 2210. Oregon faces a number of natural threats that would render critical infrastructure inoperable, including earthquake, tsunami, volcanoes, and storms and flooding. It's been estimated that 100% of the communications facilities in the coastal region and up to 76% of communications facilities along the I-5 corridor would receive medium to high damage in a Cascadia subduction zone event. Broadcast radio and television are the ideal communication methods for disaster recovery information. Owing to the diversity and resiliency of the transmission infrastructure, with a high survivability of basic broadcasting capability, a one-to-many architecture that is not subject to overloading, like cellular and wireless networks, the medium's capability to gather and transmit long-form information in addition to emergency alert system alerts, high receiver penetration in homes and cars, long battery life, and a high availability of receivers. The proposed legislation addresses issues faced by broadcasters in recent widespread disaster events, such as Storm Sandy and Hurricane Katrina. Primarily, the issues identified were access to sites for restoration of service and refueling of generators, and communication of information from incident commanders and emergency responders for public distribution in support of response and recovery. Thank you.
Okay, is this going to work, Mr. Stuckey?
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey. I'm Deputy Director for the Oregon Military Department, and we're in support of this, and it does work, Chair Boquist. I was working on this for Representative Huffman and the Oregon Public Broadcasting while I was the director of the Office of Emergency Management. I think this is a good bill. It's a good purpose. As a former Army officer, I believe it all starts with communications. We've got to be able to communicate to the public. Oftentimes, a lot of these sites that we're dealing with are also the same sites that we have public safety located on. There's only so many hills. There's only so many roads that go to those hills, that go to those towers, that go to those facilities in order to communicate. And so we believe it's really important. There's some great components to it in regards to it kicks in after a 401.165 emergency declaration. Incident commander is still in charge. We believe that making certain that the maintainers of the system can get up and get access to that in order to inform the public. And so we're very much in support of this, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today.
Thank you. Shoot, move, and communicate. A lost trait there, Colonel.
You betcha, Chair Boquist. It's
Madam Vice Chair.
Yes. Is ODOT signed up?
Nope.
No, I was looking at their testimony on the House side, and I would like to bring up the issue that they had concerns about, and one is liability. Who has liability if someone is hurt within the emergency area? ODOT had raised concerns about the safety of the first informers and other emergency personnel on the scene, as well as the liability. So I was just wondering how, if someone goes in and is working on their structures, who has a liability then if the incident commander allowed them in, thinking things were okay, and then something very wrong goes on? Have you determined where the liability would fall?
Yeah, do you want to start? I don't know.
Well, let me speak first for the broadcasters here. Any individual, excuse me, Chair Boquist, Senator Mose Anderson, any broadcaster who's going to be on that hill or in that area.
You need to state your name.
Pardon me?
You need to state your name.
Oh, Bill Johnstone, Oregon Association of Broadcasters.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, broadcasters are really bad about that, aren't they? If a broadcaster is going to be on the hill or wherever the incident is occurring, their welfare is the responsibility of their employer who is paying them to be there. Now, if the incident commander sends them into an unsafe area, I'm sure he or she's not going to do that, realizing it's unsafe. It may change, as we have witnessed forest firefighters being swept in an instant. But again, the broadcasters would be responsible for their employees.
Please.
Follow-up, Chair Boquist, Senator Mona Sanderson. Again, I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director for the Oregon Military Department. One of the components that when we're dealing with Oregon Department of Transportation, and I'm not going to speak for them, but my memory of this was they were concerned about the emergency and the declaration. And so a lot of the issues that they have surrounding their highways and the emergencies they have just aren't 401.165 worthy. And so we're making certain that we have provided the clarity that we're dealing with a governor's declared emergency here. This is a real no-life big-time emergency as opposed to an oil spill or something like that on I-5 or I-84. And then the other components were exactly what Bill just mentioned before, was is that the responsibility of the onus is still back on the employer of that broadcaster, and that person is a member of and a part of that broadcasting company.
I just wanted to have on the record, for instance, if the incident commander just says allow you in to fix your structure, and then we have an aftershock if it's an earthquake or whatever, and things change suddenly, it's sort of like an act of God. So I assume then you're saying that the broadcasters would be covering any liability regarding the personnel that go in, even though the incident commander gave them permission to go, and then all of a sudden things turned really bad.
Bill Johnston, Oregon Association of Broadcasters, Senator Boquist, Senator Mose Anderson. Yes, ma'am. They will have been sent there by their employer to do this specific duty.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Council, if you reach out to ODOT in the next 6 days and 23 hours and make sure that their issue is resolved. Senator Olson, any comments or questions? Senator Courtney, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry if this came up with the previous witnesses. As you know, I was in another committee room testing it. To whomever, I'm curious, two questions. So the reference is, and I haven't read the bill carefully, nor talked to legislative council about it, but the reference is emergency situations. It has to be a declaration of by the governor, is that correct? We're talking about those situations and those situations alone, is that right?
Chair Boquist, Senator Courtney, that is correct. It's a 401.165 emergency declaration by the governor.
So is any and all of those, or just some of those, or whatever, is just totally comprehensive? For example, man-made, woman-made, Mother Nature-made?
Chair Boquist, Senator Courtney, yes, it's governor's authorities are pretty broad in terms of declaring. Could also be a pre-event type of event, or it could be a disaster, whether it's natural or man-made.
Because if I may, just, you know, we have a, sadly, if I may, I'm not trying to generalize across this version. We have the Baltimore situation, which is underway now, mm-hmm. versus a real bad flood or quake situation. And I'm just curious, do you make no distinction in this bill?
Chair Boquist, Senator Courtney, no, as it references 401.165 in terms okay. of what the governor can do, okay. the answer is all the above.
Broadcaster, I'm curious. So you're broadcasters, whatever that means, no disrespect. So I have the Statesman Journal wants to move into an area. Their reporters, their editorial writers, one of these situations saying, do they come under, in other words, the written media, do they come under this bill?
Let me clarify. What the bill is doing is under the emergency broadcast system, you know, you hear the tone on the radio, mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff like that, is once we declare an emergency, it's that emergency broadcast system that puts information out, so on and so forth. If, for example, a tower is damaged or one of the transmitters fails to start working, what this bill does is allow the broadcasters to send the repair individuals to that site with the approval through the incident commander so that they can repair that transmitter so that we can continue to broadcast that emergency broadcast information from you and I in the government. That's
so
what the
getting are. News is not part of this in any way, shape, or form. Is that right, Mr. Chair?
News and reporting is not here, which is why there's amendments so that the Statesman Journal doesn't feel that the broadcasters, who can't remember their names anyway, don't have the opportunity to have a lead on a story.
Well, that was nice. That'll get me in trouble with my newspaper. Again, I'm not trying to complicate it. I'm just trying to get a clear understanding, at least on the record here, of what we're trying to do. So, because I'm not intimately familiar with all parts of the bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for tolerating my question.
And please clarify.
Chair Boquist, Senate President Courtney, I would like to clarify that the bill specifically says it's only for the operation, repair, and maintenance of those transmitting facilities. So it is not for news gathering. The access would not be for news gathering.
And so, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, so therefore, written media would never have a justification to be in there? Under this, would ever have any reason to be in there under this bill, or should this become law?
Before you speak, I just for a point of clarification here, just as example, let's say if you had a transportation in the 21st century that we're going forward, there may in fact be situations, and I'm now thinking of written papers who actually have internet services and who have electronic communications too. The goal, once again, is to repair a communications facility. So the reporters from an entity, whether it be a broadcaster or, as you know, newspapers now are doing multiple things. There's, most print is going away.
Yeah.
I actually do see a case in which you may have tower situations in which a repair individual may need to go to a facility in order to continue the broadcast.
Again, Mr. Chair, if I may be allowed to make, given all the electronic stuff that we're using now, I'm not so sure. I'm just going to follow up. You're not going to have a situation where some part of the electronic written media, however you describe it today, with disrespect, with all due respect, is going to say we're going to be on. We're going to have a right to be there. So I'm just telling you that. And again, I'm not trying to say you don't do the bill. I'm not saying I don't support the bill. I just was trying to get into some of this so we understand the magnitude of what we're doing here. I'm fascinated by the bill. I really am. So I'm not trying to complicate lives. I'm not trying to be the smartest guy in the class. None of that stuff. Just stumbling around in my own way to try to find out what you intend to do here and to make you aware of what I think is out there eventually one day with a situation, a real sad situation, where you're going to find yourself struggling or somebody with, you can go in there, no, you can't, yes, I can, no, you can't. That's all, Your Honor. I'm done. I won't say anything more now. I'm done. I'm all quiet now.
Sure. Well, that's fine, Mr. President, because I thought I did enough stumbling around on the floor for all of us for the day. You had a comment, please.
Yes, Chair Boquist, Senator Courtney, may answer the question. Anyone who will have access to that facility, to that area, will have gone through credentialing. That credentialing will have been issued by the Oregon Association of Broadcasters through the oversight of Oregon Emergency Management. That person would have had to have been requested to receive that credentialing from their employer before. So if that employer, whether it's a newspaper that has a tower to receive satellite images or to send out their to receive their story or whatever the case may be, if they have an engineer that needs to get up on the hill to repair that tower or that facility, and that employer has in fact reached out to Oregon Association of Broadcasters and Oregon Emergency Management to receive that credentialing, and have they taken the required testing and exam and testing and passed successfully and had been issued the credentialing, yes, sir, then they would have been allowed, with the incident commander's permission, to go into that site.
Senator Olson, your question, please.
Well, I was going to say in the future there, and you had mentioned this probably, that if they had to go check one of their servers that might have been disrupted, transferring information back and forth, that an engineer could go in and check the server would be a situation where the newspaper could be involved.
Right. Okay, any other questions, colleagues? Since there's none.
Well, Chair Boquist, Senator Courtney, did I answer the question?
Yes, we'll make an exception to what you just said earlier. Yes, please.
I think you tried very hard to do so.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2210A? I see somebody standing. Oh, there. Look at that. ODOT is here, as it turns out. So you don't need 23 hours and 30 minutes now.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator, just to answer the question, we're fine with the bill based on the amendments. The original bill was very broad. We raised that concern. The amendments took care of those, and we're good. Thank you.
Can I share any other questions? No. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Colleagues, since there's no one else signed up, we're going to roll this forward for a work session next week. And with that, we're going to close the public hearing on 2210. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2036. Representative, if you would please start coming up with anybody you want to be on the initial panel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2036 designates a portion of U.S. Highway 395 as a World War I Veterans Memorial Highway, Interstate 5 as Korean War Veterans Memorial Highway and Purple Heart Trail, and U.S. Highway 101 as Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq Veterans Memorial Highway. Directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to place and maintain markers, permits acceptance of funds and agreements with veterans groups to that end, and prohibits the use of public funds, declares an emergency effective on passage, no revenue impact, minimal fiscal, no subsequent referral, and the House committee was unanimous, and it came off the House floor unanimously as well.
Please, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is John Huffman, and I represent House District 59. And to the right of me is Lieutenant Colonel retired Dick Tobiasen, and he knows me all too well. He's got my cell phone number. He knows how to get a hold of me. And since I've been in this building since 2007, every session, Dick has reached out to me to dedicate one of Oregon's highways as a Veterans Memorial Highway. And I think it was 2013, Senator Monis Anderson and I and some others jumped on, and we dedicated I-84 as the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Highway. So when we dedicated that, the opening of it, on Memorial Day of last year in the Dalles at the Veterans Home, when Dick was speaking, he suggested that he was going to have to get in touch with Representative Huffman about the next highway. And I'm going, so after it was over, Bob Bryant from ODOT and Cameron Smith from ODVA were there. And so we gathered up in the corner and cornered Dick and said, how many more highways are there? Are we just doing 1%? So anyway, this is a comprehensive bill to do all of the rest of the highways on our state veterans group lists. And it includes Highway 101 and 395 and I-5. And it includes dedication for veteran groups and Purple Heart Highway for I-5. And I will let Dick continue to explain what all the bill does. But it's it was humorous. I had to share the story. Dick has a heart as big as Oregon. And I really appreciate his work. But I really appreciate he and ODOT and ODVA and everybody cooperating to just do one comprehensive bill so that we can get our veterans recognized on all of our highways. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to excuse myself to see if the House Veterans Committee has any work left for me to do.
Thank you very much, Reverend.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Representative Huffman. Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, distinguished members of the committee. I am Dick Tobias, and I'm the chairman of the Bend Heroes Foundation, which is a nonprofit veterans foundation in Bend. And I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, as Representative Huffman mentioned, and a two-tour Vietnam veteran. I'm a member of the American Legion, Military Officers Association of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. Bend Heroes Foundation is located in Bend, Oregon, 1900 Northeast 3rd Street.
Could you push the mic our direction a little bit? You're a little bit too close to the mic.
A little too close. Okay, thank you. So we're located in Bend. I'm accompanied by two dear friends, Robert Lee Walker, on our far right here in the blue shirt. Robert Lee Walker III is an Army veteran who served in Kosovo and Iraq as a specialist, fourth class. He was in radio communications most of the time, but he did experience very close combat. Mr. Walker is a director of our foundation. He's also our webmaster, and he'll be the guru on the slides here. I'm also accompanied by Joel Dulashanti to my right, who was was an Army veteran, served in Afghanistan with the 82nd Airborne. Sergeant Dulashanti was severely wounded by the enemy. He received his Purple Heart from President George W. Bush at Walter Reed in a very emotional ceremony when he was about 90 pounds lighter than he is today. He's also a member of the Purple Heart chapter in Portland. We were supposed to have the American Legion representative and the VFW representative. The American Legion representative has a health issue today, so I'm going to read the resolution that the American Legion Department of Oregon passed, and it was entered in the record in the House. I'll just read parts of it. Whereas Oregon House Bill 2036 will designate four highways to honor World War I, Korea, Purple Heart, Persian Gulf, Iraq, and Afghanistan veterans, and whereas the American Legion preamble to its Constitution states to preserve the memories and incidents of our associations in the Great Wars, and whereas the American Legion Department of Oregon is the largest wartime veterans organization in the state of Oregon, now therefore be it resolved at the American Legion Department of Oregon Executive Committee meeting held in Milwaukee, Oregon, January 11th, support and recommend passage of Oregon House Bill 2036. The VFW representative today is at the VA hospital having a knee examination. It took him 1 year to get that appointment, and it's his health is will be vastly improved, we hope. It is an honor for all of us to testify to you in support of HB 2036 today. Beginning in 2008, our foundation requested legislation designating two border-to-border highways in Oregon honoring World War II and Vietnam War veterans. The foundation raised all the funds and managed the installation of 18 World War II veterans historic highway signs on US 97. And we also, with the Oregon State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America, raised all the funds necessary to install 16 signs on Interstate 84. On both highway projects, we enjoyed an outstanding relationship with the Oregon Department of Transportation Region 4, which is Mr. Bryant's region, designing and installing the signs. We paid ODOT to install the signs when we could not get volunteer contractors to drill the holes and put the signs in for us. World War II and Vietnam veterans sincerely appreciate their new highway signs. We know that from hearing from them in letters. We hope to see that repeated on Interstate 5 and US 101 very soon. There are no surviving World War I veterans in our nation to enjoy their signs on US 395. Slide 1 shows four of the 405 World War II honor flight veterans the foundation has honored with free four-day trips to Washington, D.C. Here they are with their honorific sign on U.S. Highway 97 near the intersection with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway and Interstate 84. Slide 2 shows Vietnam veterans with their sign on I-84 near La Grande. We have pictures of every sign with veterans groups there, and you can tell for their turnout that they're deeply appreciative for the legislation and ODOT support. We want to thank Representative John Huffman for his leadership with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway legislation and HB 2036 and co-sponsoring the World War II highway. Representative Huffman, as you just heard, was the keynote speaker for the dedication of the 377-mile Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway on Memorial Day last year when he encouraged us to request an all-in-one highway bill now incorporated in HB 2036. The foundation requested HB 2036 and enthusiastically supports it now before this committee. If enacted into law, HB 2036 will accomplish our vision of honoring all Oregon veterans who served during five major wars around the globe, from World War I to the present, 98 years. That would be accomplished with prominent ODOT-approved signs installed along 1,343 miles of four new border-to-border highways. ODOT anticipates this becoming law and has appointed Ray Mabby in Salem to be our single point of contact to work with. ODOT has already come up with designs for the signs and costs, and we're delighted that we'll be able to work with one point of contact and veterans groups to do that, and the foundation will become the treasurer for that program. Rob is now going to show us some more slides. This is Highway 395, and that would be the World War I Veterans Memorial Highway. Next. This is I-5, which would be a Purple Heart Trail, and the Korean War Veterans Memorial Highway. The importance of this particular highway is it will link the Purple Heart Trail in Washington State and the one in California. It'll become the first border-to-border Purple Heart Trail in the United States linking Canada and Mexico. No other state can make that statement. So here we are in Oregon with an opportunity to make that happen. On the slide there, Rob has shown that the I-5 is 308 miles long, but it shows there are 69 veterans groups along that highway that certainly can go out near communities and raise the funds for signs. ODOT has said we can put 10 signs on each highway, 5 in each direction, so that's quite easy to do. Next, please. This is the highway that intrigues me the most because we're going to honor our young combat veterans while most of them are alive. We've waited, but decades and decades and decades to honor all the other war veterans, and here we are honoring the World War I veterans, and they're all gone. So this is a great opportunity to recognize and thank our young veterans. This highway is another 300-mile-long highway, and there are 26 veterans groups, and we already have obligations from folks to buy 3 signs from that highway as long as the bill gets passed. So the gold stars represent veterans who home of record was on that highway, who lost their lives all the way from the Gulf War to Iraq and Afghanistan. So we hope that the veterans groups in those communities and the community themselves will honor their local veterans. And I think one of the big draws and why Rob and Joel are here is that if we older veterans do something to honor the younger veterans, I think we will tend to draw them into our organization, because there is no state organization for Iraq and Afghanistan and Gulf War veterans. There is for Korean War veterans and Vietnam veterans, but there's no such thing for our youngest veterans. Next, please, Rob. So if you link up all the highways, what Representative Huffman was showing was that we would eventually have all the highways in Oregon named for veterans by wars, and including the 41st Sunset Division up that linkage between Portland and U.S. 101. Next, please. And this is a map of the United States with Purple Heart trails. You can see the big gap in there. Oregon's missing. Next, please. And this is some data on how many veterans have served in each of these 5 wars, how many died, how many were wounded, and how many are living. All that tells you is that 75% of all the veterans who served in those 5 wars are living today in Oregon. Of course, there are none for World War I, but the rest of them, you have the data there. So the bottom line is, with these new highways 101, I-5, and 395, you're talking about 207,000 veterans who served in those wars, and 115,000 living. And if you look at the Purple Heart Trail situation, you're talking about 21,000 Oregonians would have been eligible for the Purple Heart. So those are the folks we're honoring on Highway I-5. We know there are more veterans living that have Purple Hearts than are on that chart. Joel and I, for instance, and Commander Upton and Adjutant Haltner. So those, our numbers are not included. These are the ones that, because we came from other states, most of us. Next, please. These are the names of the 13 veterans on Highway 101 who lost their lives between the Gulf War, we're talking 20 years, between the Gulf War and today, and where they live, where their home of record was, and why we want to contact folks in those areas to help honor them. Next, please. There are plenty of veterans groups in Oregon that can pull a rope to get the money to pay ODOT for these signs. There are 99, it's roughly 100 veterans groups, and you can see where they are by highway. So there are lots of opportunities for the veterans to work with their communities to sponsor the signs. Next, please. We had a reason for naming these highways. I-5 would be the Korean War and Purple Heart Trail, because you already know why the Purple Heart, because that would link the two Purple Hearts trails in adjacent states. But the Korean War Memorial is there in Wilsonville, so it makes sense to have I-5 would be a Korean War highway. Next, please. And Mark Hemstreet, who owns a number of Shiloh Inns, dedicated that sign in Lincoln City for the Gulf War veterans, so that's why we picked 101. Plus, being an astronomer, the sun rises in the east, so it hits World War I first, and it crosses the highways and sunsets on our youngest veterans and the Sunset Division Highway also. Next, please. That's the Purple Heart. That's what Joel, Charlie, Robert, and I wear proudly, and we didn't get it for free. It's one of the very few medals. It's the oldest medal in America, authorized originally by George Washington, then general, and authorized by the President of the United States. Next, please. That's what a Purple Heart Trail sign looks like in Washington State, and Rob is going to tell us what this all means. We have one more slide.
Yeah. Senator Boquist, Senator Anderson, Senator Olson, Senator Courtney, I'd like to thank you for letting me testify. My name's Robert Lee Walker III. I'm a director and webmaster of the Bend Heroes Foundation. I'd like to read for you the conclusions and recommendations for HB 2036. The Oregon House of Representatives has unanimously approved HB 2036 with the Senate's Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee, and the Oregon State. Oregon will honor all the veterans who served in combat since World War I. With the dedication of I-5 as a Purple Heart Trail, Oregon will create, in conjunction with California and Washington, the first national border-to-border Purple Heart Trail in the United States, spanning from Canada to Mexico. With the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq highway on US 101, Oregon will be the first in our nation with such a highway. The US 101 highway can serve as an opportunity to recruit young veterans to VSOs. Veterans will raise all funds and pay ODOT for signs and installations. The American Legion, VFW, KWVA, MOPH, and the Bend Heroes Foundation support HB 2036, and we respectfully request that this committee vote in favor of HB 2036. I also have two personal reasons why I want this bill to pass. First is I'm a big proponent in trying to get Iraq and Afghanistan veterans to participate in the veterans community. That seems to be lacking right now. And my second one is I'm expecting my first child in 4 weeks, and we do a lot of trips to the coast. I want him to be able to see those signs and be proud of his dad. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Joel DeLashanti, and I'm a life member of the Military Order of Purple Heart. Chairman Senator Boquist, Senate President Courtney, and other honorable members of the committee, it is my honor to speak on behalf of HB 2036. It'll also be my pleasure to answer any questions that you may have to the best of my ability. 1 year ago today, I landed in the Portland metro area for the first time ever in my life. Before then, I'd been around the world and pretty much all over the rest of America. Leaving the Army and staying at my retirement duty station, Fort Benning, Georgia, I decided to go through the holidays of 2013 and round out the end of my lease. It gave me the time I needed to make an informed decision about where I wanted to move to and spend the rest of my life. Sure, I wanted to go home to Washington, D.C., be with friends and family. The cost of living there is way too high, though. Maybe I wanted to move to Hong Kong and find a bungalow in Soho, but to be honest, moving internationally was just a little over my head. So I had two real options, Chicago and Portland. Just so happened that in 2013, Chicago had more 90-degree days that summer than Atlanta, Georgia did. So since I like temperate weather, Portland it was. So I sat out across the country a year ago. Today I arrived, and I lived in a hotel in Vancouver for 5 days before I actually found the house that I live in currently. There is nothing more exciting to me in Oregon than to take a trip to Bend and Mount Bachelor, Newport, or to Florence and check out the sand dunes, go to Astoria and have dinner on the port, make a drive through the Sisters, watch those four-legged deer community hang out on the sidewalk next to local businesses like people don't exist, a spring trip to Mount Hood for Snow Kona, which this year was last weekend, a 30-minute drive to the Columbia River Gorge, including to cool off and back and heading down to Salem, brewery capital of the world. That doesn't include the many things you can do as an activist or sportsman within the states. One of the many things that I have grown a huge pride for as a transplant Oregonian is that in being from the East Coast originally, there is nothing in comparison when driving through rainforest, along snow-capped volcanoes, through the gorge in its vast expanse, along the coast seeing the largest sand dunes in America, waves crashing on amazing cliff formations in the ocean on the southern coast, and the sights that rival cliff formations in Southeast Asia. I am proud to be an Oregonian. But we lack something of an approach of trending legislation that the rest of the country is heavily involved in, unless it deals with same-sex marriage or marijuana. We end up not being the first, sometimes not even the middle, but the last people to participate. An approval of HB 2036 changes those tally marks and makes us a forerunner for veteran support. By completing the first border-to-border Interstate 5 National Purple Heart Trail to date, by giving Oregon the first Persian Gulf Global War on Terrorism Memorial Highway on the breathtaking US 101 in the nation, when, by the way, our National Guard unit just got back from Afghanistan. I speak for myself about HB 2036 as a former member of the U.S. military, probably the most recent in the room to come off active duty. As an Afghanistan and global war on terrorism veteran, a Purple Heart recipient, and an experienced and top-ranked Army Airborne U.S. Army sniper. But more importantly, as one-year Oregonian and an American from the other side of the country, I can tell you what this bill represents to me. I have driven across the country literally at least once in an attempt to move here, and I am a veteran that cares about veterans. I want more than anything else for everyone in Oregon to be aware of veterans' sacrifices and become more aware and technically prideful of their veterans. HB 2036 supports legislation allowing for the immediate approval to designate highways and interstates through border-to-border crossings in Oregon to be declared veterans' memorials. I can't think of any better place to have a veterans' memorial. It's not every day of the week that I visit a museum or a memorial park, but I am driving down the highway or even an interstate at least once a week. Every day that I work on this legislation and other local municipality legislation, and even my advocacy for veteran pro federal legislation, I become more inspired to visit the local to me veterans' memorials and parks. Why? Because I'm a veteran, I realize that pro support of all given sacrifices extends further into each part of the community through its citizens and their want to be a part of what has been given. Coming from a person who has been able to give so much but not enough, I am a above-the-knee amputee and have multiple combat injuries. I can say four things. Oregon supports the most recent veterans. Oregon supports all of our veterans. Differentiating cities support their combat wounded veterans. And Oregon is the missing link for the first international border-to-border Purple Heart Trail. As a member of the Oregon Department of Congressionally Chartered Organization, MOPH, I can tell you this is a good bill with minimal funding impact. Thank you for your time. I appreciate everything that's been done so far.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your service.
Could we respond to any questions, sir?
Madam Vice Chair.
Well, nothing makes me prouder than driving along the highway and seeing some of these signs. And you forgot to mention that the World War Vietnam sign is also in my district.
Two of them.
There's two of them. So we didn't dedicate that one. I think is a very valuable thing for Oregonians to be able to drive down, and I'm very excited about having one along 101 for the Afghan, Iraq, and what's the other
Persian
one?
Gulf.
And Persian Gulf, yeah. Thank you for your service.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, I thank you for your service, too. I moved to Oregon for the same reason you did, the exact same reason. I actually lived in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot nicer out here, but thank you for putting this together. It's about time we recognize our veterans, all of them.
I should mention that Joel's and his wife are expecting a baby in how many days?
The next, the next 2 weeks, basically.
Oh, cool.
So Sergeant Dolashanti is, as we mentioned, is an above-the-knee amputee, and he is a competitive runner and long jump. Competitor, so he'll be off to Phoenix to compete in games later this next month.
Wow.
But I would like to personally thank the committee, and I'd like to thank you, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, for the testimony we did in 2008 for Highway World War II, for the World War II Veterans Historic Highway. The blessings from that highway to the veterans are enormous, and I know your dad was a World War II veteran, too. Thank you.
Senator Cordy?
I shouldn't have to ask this. Where's Highway 395?
395.
Yeah.
The significance of 395.
Location.
Pardon?
Location.
Location. It's interesting. World War I veterans, if they were alive, they'd be the oldest. They're all gone. There are none living in the world. So the sun does rise in the east, and it does cross 395 first. World War I veterans fought in mostly no man's land. 395 is pretty much no man's land.
From where to where? Well,
it starts at Rufus, right?
It goes from Lakeview to Pendleton. It goes through Burns. There are only four veterans groups there. My wife and I are dedicating a sign on that highway, if the law is passed, in honor of her dad, served in World War I.
It goes up through John Day, right?
It goes through John Day.
Right.
So we'd put two signs in Burns and one in Lakeview and one in Pendleton. So the all these highways are linked. You notice they all touch. All four from the south touch I-84. There was a method in our madness.
So there's a highway from in the southwestern Oregon all the way to, did you say Pendleton?
Yeah, it's from southeast from Lakeview.
To south.
Through
to
Burns.
East.
Mm-hmm.
395.
Mm-hmm. Goes into California, down into, and up through Washington State.
That's no man's land. I can assure you that. I've driven out there.
I wonder if there's any other highway in Oregon that's as long as that. When I think of different highways, I just, I don't know.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for the service. Is there anyone else signed up? I have, make sure I have. Yep, we do. So if you gentlemen want to switch out, can't tell by the uniform whether Army or Marines, but... Well, that's just like a soldier. Don't break the equipment, okay?
We're Army, by the way.
Chairman Billquist and district members, for the record, I am Robert Haltner, native Oregon, military of the Purple Heart, department adjutant, have been department commander 6 years in a row, and it's currently the adjutant. I served U.S. Army, drafted 1967-68, served with the 1st Infantry Division, 2nd of the 28th Infantry, and 2nd of the 2nd Mechanized in Vietnam. Was wounded February 2nd, 1968, Tet Offensive. I joined the Purple Heart in 1999. I lost many friends in Vietnam. The support of House Bill 2036 of I-5 being the Purple Heart Trail. The state of Washington and the Purple Heart Trail from border to Canada to the Oregon border. California has Purple Heart Trail from Oregon to Mexico. This would confirm the whole system down. There are over 45 states who have the Purple Heart Trail, and Oregon is one of the few that still doesn't have one. The Purple Heart Trail honors those who have gone before us and the ones who are here, honoring all the veterans who have been wounded or killed in combat. This will honor all veterans who have been awarded the Purple Heart for their actions in the service. Thank you.
Senator Boquist and distinguished members. My name is Charles Upton, and I'm the department commander for the state of Oregon for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. I was wounded in Vietnam, 1968. I served with the 1st Infantry Division, 2nd Battalion, 28th Infantry. And I transferred from that, went to the 329th Heavy Boat Company in Da Nang, where I was wounded in Dong Ha Qua Viet area. One of the major things that I want to express is that Military Order of the Purple Heart happens to be the best-kept secret in America. Not many people know of us. And I think that with the signs that we have, that we are wanting to put up, we'll change that subject. And you'd be surprised on how many people do not know what a Purple Heart is, or what it means, and what we sacrifice to earn that. And what most of us are still sacrificing. I don't have a whole lot to say. I mean, it's already been covered quite a bit in the last few minutes. But I would like to say that the Department of Oregon stands behind us and stands behind Mr. Tobiasen. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you for your service. And I'm sorry that we have not recognized our Purple Heart veterans. until I think it was last session or the session before, where we did pass legislation that will help Purple Heart veterans and family members of Purple Heart veterans. And I believe it was education. We are providing opportunities for those who have earned the Purple Heart, have the Purple Heart, to give them recognition and support in the state of Oregon, and I'm proud of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, gentlemen, thank you for your service. The Lieutenant Colonel can't keep his mouth shut. He wants to come up. And I would like ODOT to come up because I have a question of ODOT real quick, too.
You know an officer that wasn't wordy.
For the record, I'm Dick Tobias, and I should mention something to you. Oregon is home to the oldest Medal of Honor recipient in the United States. 79 living, Bob Maxwell, who began as a director of our foundation. He can't be here because he fell and broke both wrists. And he had to not only cope with that, but we buried his wife last Saturday. So Bob is dealing with a lot of issues right now at age 94, but he did ask before all these things happened. He said, I'd like to go with you to testify on 2036. And I'm sure he would, if he were here today, he'd say that this is a good bill. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. My question is a clarification, because we've actually not had ODOT here before, but we have 2036, which, I mean, you guys support is fine going forward. We've had multiple dozens of bills in which we have to have an individual come forward in order to put a sign out on the highway. As the director, are you happy that we, because I know we've just passed another bill, we have two, both House and Senate bills passing in the night, in which we're supposedly setting up a process in which you folks at ODOT can resolve these issues and deal with them on a case-by-case basis and give you the authority. Is that correct and sound familiar, and have we done all the things that are necessary to do that?
Mr. Chair, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. Yes, we're on track for those bills proceeding through and basically creating a program that mirrors what we have for the Fallen Officer Program. So we've had, I believe for several years, a program where when an officer in Oregon is killed in line of duty, the legislature just has to pass a resolution with their name on it. It starts a process immediately for us to work with the family and place a sign. The bill that's in place, and I can't cite it off the top of my head, but that's in process and moving through, and once that's passed, we'll be able to do the same thing for fallen heroes as well.
Right. I just want to make sure, because we've not had you before, that we actually have this and you're satisfied the right language is
yes.
Because many times this building, our efforts, what we intend and what happens are two different things. Senator Olson, you had a
question. That bill is 2386. It'll be coming to you shortly. It just passed the floor today.
Awesome. Great.
Thank you. Any other questions for the panelists? Thank you, and thank you, Paul, for testifying. Okay, colleagues. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2036. We had three bills we heard today. I did not hear any opposition. If you have problems, please be in touch. All three of these will be rolled forward for work sessions next week. With that, colleagues, unless somebody has something, we are done for the day. Day.